And we'd like to wish a happy new year and welcome to Focus on the Foothills. This is our first program of the new year, and our guest today, also a happy new year to the, as of yesterday, re-sworn-in representative from the 5th District here in North Carolina, Congresswoman Virginia Fox. Good to have you with us on the program today.
Oh, thank you, Angela, and happy new year to you and everybody listening. It's even though we have many challenges facing us, there is nothing better than to live in the United States. And any time we're doing that, we're going to have a happy new year.
Absolutely. And so many things going on right now. I'm not even too sure where to start. And I hate to start on a really bad note, but I need to get your response on back before Christmas. It was horror of horrors when we heard about the Sandy Hook Elementary tragedy right. and the shooting there. Your response to that?
Well, you know, everybody's heart breaks when we hear of, you know, anybody being killed senselessly in this country. There's no question about that. And so I joined the other people in this country at being horrified about what happened. My heart just goes out to the people who were harmed, the parents and all the families. It's just awful. But we have to put everything into perspective, Angela. 500 people were killed in Chicago last year, I understand. And we should be horrified at that, too.
Right. Well, now, this has sparked again a debate on the Second Amendment and gun laws and the call for new gun laws. What do you think? Do we need new gun laws? Are we just not enforcing the ones that we have?
We need much more sensitivity to how do we deal with a person like that, like VPI, like Arizona, where people should be paying attention to signs that there are folks who are disturbed, and try to do something about those people instead of trying to punish law-abiding citizens who do what they're supposed to do. That's where our problem is. All of these mass killings like this have come from disturbed people.
Right.
And we need to not, and we need a balanced approach to these things. We already have plenty of gun laws. We already do our best to prevent people who aren't supposed to have them from having them. The gentleman who killed the firefighters, I've forgotten where that was. It was somewhere up north. He had somebody buy the guns for him. So the gun laws work. It's bad people.
Well,
create the problem.
I was talking with someone. They had said the same thing, you know, about doing away with guns. And I said, look, if it's someone disturbed like that wants to do something evil,
right. they're going to do it.
I think it was in China where they took a knife into a school
right.
and killed just, they didn't even have a gun. So,
right.
Again,
exactly.
You're right. We need to deal with the troubled people, not with the law abiding citizens who are actually, you know.
That's right. Our focus is just in the wrong place. We all know. I mean, laws cannot make people good if they're evil.
Right.
There is evil in the world.
Yes.
And, you know, that's, I think, part of our problem. Our prayer this morning, I'm going to get a copy of it. It was a Lincoln statement, and it was about how we have come to believe that we're smart enough to do things without God. And we've forgotten our morality.
Right.
And that's what we have to focus on.
Yeah.
Not more laws.
No, I agree. I think that's our biggest problem. We've forgotten God. But
that's right.
Moving on to, of course, the fiscal cliff, which has been so much in the news, and I was even listening.
Now, we thought we weren't going to hear that term fiscal cliff anymore, Angela. Everybody's sick of it.
I know. In fact, I had heard, you know, this week, you know, people do not want to hear about the fiscal cliff. They don't care about the fiscal cliff. So I thought, you know, I want to talk about this. So I tell you what, if you'll listen to me talk about the fiscal cliff, folks, Later in the program, we'll talk about DJs in space, the Congresswoman and I teaming up to run in the next presidential race, or I'll give you my secret recipe for great hamburgers on the grill, just, you know, if you just stick with us. But the fiscal cliff, most people, it seems they are interested in it, but according to most national polls, at least 60 to 80% of the country wants Congress to do some spending cuts.
Correct. We were told this morning the latest poll that was done for us, 72% of the American people want us to cut spending.
So
that's a pretty high number.
So I received a thing from the president. He had sent out a little press release, and he said in that that by raising the rates on the wealthiest 2% with this agreement, that we're reducing the deficit, and that this bill will prevent taxes from being raised on middle-class families. So
I wish that were true.
Me too, because I've already gotten my check so far this month, and it was less than what it was before.
Well, two things related to your check being less. Number one, the payroll tax deduction that had been put in place, I believe, 2 years ago, went away. And that's a good thing. I know it doesn't sound like a good thing, Angela, but what we were doing was we were not putting that money into Social Security, which was weakening Social Security even further. And so that needed to be done, I think. However, the tax increases that the president insisted upon for what he calls the wealthiest Americans, but that are going to hit millions of small businesses and destroy a lot of jobs in the private sector, would give enough money to run the federal government from between 8 and 17 days, depending on who you listen to.
So that's it, 8 to 17 days, and there's actually like 365 in the year. So what are we going to do with the rest of those days?
And it's not going to reduce the deficit, unfortunately. Yes, the bill stopped tax increases on people making less than $450,000 a year, or $400,000 if you're single. But it isn't going to do what we need to do. We have got to cut the debt and cut the deficit. Our debt, just the short-term debt, now we're not talking about obligations for Social Security, obligations for Medicare and other things, is $16.4 trillion. That is a debt we are giving to our children and grandchildren. We are being irresponsible as adults right now. We're forcing them to pay this money back. We're not dealing with what we need to deal with.
Yeah, but I don't think people understand what that means. I think they hear that, and it's kind of like water off a duck's back. I think you're right. But aren't we going down the exact same path as Greece? And if you'll recall watching the news with people,
rioting in the streets,
and I mean, you know, the country about to fall apart, it seems, until they were bailed out. But again, this was just a temporary thing. So if they don't fix their problems, they're going to be right back to rioting in the streets. And it was just unbelievable unemployment. Are we not headed down that exact same road?
Well, yes, and Republicans have been saying that for several years. We're saying we have to cut spending. But every time we attempt to do that, we are thwarted by the Senate and by the President, because they don't want to deal with reality. And they'd rather, I hate this expression too, we need to relegate it to the not-to-be-spoken words, kick the can down the road.
Right.
Because we are not mature enough to make the tough decisions. Angela, there is no reason in the world why we cannot cut across the board in the federal government 10%, 15%. I mean, I vote for every bill that says 1%, 2%, 3%. I go right up the line. But everybody has their pet projects. and they don't want to cut anything. Well, we can't keep operating this way. Again, we're being irresponsible.
Now,
what Republicans have said is we have to do that. We passed a budget last year that dealt with that. We dealt with Medicare. We have not touched Social Security. We haven't even talked about Social Security, although this year Social Security drew out a little over $400 million more than came into it. So Social Security is beginning to be a drain on the general fund. And it will need to be dealt with also because it's adding to the deficit and adding to the debt. But we didn't even deal with that last year. But we're saying as long as the federal government is running health care, we're going to have a problem. Medicare, again, and we could go back and I can get you the stats, but just let me give a hypothetical situation. Let's say when Medicare Part A was passed back in 1965, they said in 10 years, just as a hypothetical, it was going to cost $1 billion. I'm just giving you a hypothetical now. It actually cost like $10 billion. I don't have the right numbers, but I'm giving you the ratios.
Right.
It was like 10 times more expensive than what they had projected. Now, on the other hand, Medicare Part D, the drug program, went the other direction. It cost less than they projected. You know why? Because Medicare Part D is operated in the private sector.
Mm.
When you sign up for Medicare Part D, you have drug companies competing for your business. Medicare Part A, Part B, that's run by the federal government. There's no accountability. There's no checks and balances. We call it an entitlement program because everybody who's 66 years old, 65 years old, walks up to the Medicare window and says, I want to sign up. And then when you go to get services, if you can find a doctor who will serve you, then you get served. There's no copay, or virtually no copay, and, you know, when something's free, people are going to go after it. The average couple right now that's retiring is costing the Medicare system three times what they have put into it. And those are facts, Angela. Those are facts. It's not a political statement. Those are numbers that neither side can refute. It's just there.
Yeah.
So the average couple, by the way, has expenses for Medicare now from the time they sign up till the time they die of over $300,000, and they're putting in, I think, around $90,000.
You know, my son came in. My son is a 17-year-old boy who came in the other night, and we were watching this stuff on TV, and he said, I don't get it. He said, why is it that they want to keep spending more than they're taking in? He said, that doesn't work. Now,
right.
If that's
we borrow 42 cents for every dollar we spend right now.
If a 17-year-old high school student can get it, why can most of Congress not get it?
Well, again, because they've gotten by for years with avoiding this. Our big problem, Angela, is not most of Congress. Our big problem is the Senate. I just have to tell you, it is the Senate.
Well, now, I cease to be amazed. The coverage, according to the national media, through December, it was Congress that was causing the problem and Congress
that was causing
this fiscal cliff dilemma.
Right. And when they talk about Congress, most people think about the House of Representatives. They should be. The Congress is both the House and the Senate. But in these cases, in almost every case, what you see is the Senate's the problem. Let me switch just a little bit and give you an example. We've been debating what to do to help the people in the Northeast that got hit by Hurricane Sandy.
Right.
Okay? when we have a disaster, we come together, we allocate money at the federal level to help the different states, some more than others. Well, we got a bill from the Senate the other day that said, we want you to allocate $60 billion. Well, to take care of the real cost of the hurricane is probably more somewhere between $10 and $20 billion.
So what is the other $40 billion? You're not insinuating that the Senate would want just pork barrel stuff in that, would you?
I'm not only insinuating, I'm saying it's pork barrel. It is purely projects that will go to individual senators' districts to make them look good.
Do you know how low I think that is if you would ride the backs of victims like that and people who actually are in a disaster, and you're going to ride them just so you can get some pork barrel stuff in a bill? Do you know how sad I think that is for people to try to do that?
Well, it is, but they keep getting elected by doing things like that because they, quote, bring home the bacon. And that's part of our problem. There has to be shared sacrifice in this country. And that's, again, people say, well, don't cut my program, cut those other programs over there. And to do this, we have to have a balanced approach. To the president, that means raising taxes. To Republicans, it means looking for loopholes, looking for revenue, and also cutting spending. Because no country has ever taxed its way out of a deficit. It cannot be done. You may have heard about France putting in a 75% tax.
Right.
Those people who are going to be taxed at 75%, guess what they're doing? They're moving to Belgium, or they're moving to Switzerland, or they're moving to Spain.
Remind us how we did this during the Clinton Newt Gingrich era. We had a deficit, and then we had a balanced budget, and then we had a surplus. So,
and Republicans, because Republicans in 1994 won a majority in the House and the Senate, and they cut spending. They did not raise taxes. Clinton got the Democrats to raise taxes in 92, and then the Democrats got defeated. Republicans came in and they cut spending. They behaved well for several years. And then Republicans, unfortunately, got the fever. But let me remind you of something even more recent. I came here in 2005. My group of people who came in started immediately beating the drum for the existing members. You all have lost your way. You've got to cut spending. We actually were able to cut spending in 2005 and 2006. In October of 2006, the CBO projected that there would be a $358 billion surplus at the end of that fiscal year. But unfortunately, the Democrats demagogued Republicans in that election, and they took over in January of 2007. When they took over, the unemployment rate was 4.5%, and we were on track to have a $358 billion surplus because we had just made small cuts. They weren't even very large, small cuts. But those tax rates were lower from 2001-2003. And then it all went to pot because the Democrats started spending money. They had both the House and the Senate. They started spending money. Then President Obama came in. They passed the stimulus. They passed Obamacare. And all of a sudden, we have 5 years of trillion-dollar-plus deficits. So in less than a year, we went from a projection for a surplus of $358 billion to a deficit of over $1 trillion.
Now,
it doesn't take long to do it.
back in 2010, when the Super Committee failed to find cuts, Obama...
Pardon me.
That's fine. I've been doing the same thing for a week.
Right.
In November 2010, the Super Committee failed to find cuts. Obama made clear that he would veto any attempt to undo or alter the automatic spending cuts across the board, known as the sequester.
Correct.
He said the only way these spending cuts will not take place is if Congress gets back to work and agrees on a balanced plan to reduce the deficit. So is this what happened?
Well, we passed last May a bill to stop the sequester.
The House passed it.
The House passed the bill. We did not make the major cuts to defense because we don't think that's the right thing to do. We did make cuts to defense. We did. But we didn't eviscerate our Defense Department. Even the President's Secretary of Defense says that if the sequester goes into effect, we will hollow out our military. Republicans did that last May. The Senate would not act on the bill. All we did the other day, or all they did, because I voted no, was to put off sequester for 2 months. We still have to deal with it. We do a balanced approach. We have committee meetings. We vote. We do it through what we call regular order. It's out there in the open. The media simply ignores it most of the time. They will not talk about what Republicans have done. They want to constantly blame us because, frankly, they side with the president most of the time.
Well, now, I heard former Speaker Newt Gingrich say just the other night that the House needs to do what they've been doing. They need to legislate like they are supposed to do according to the Constitution.
Right.
They need to go ahead and keep passing their bills and balancing budgets and do what they do and just allow the Senate and the president to take care of it or to deal with it. And he said, and you need to get this out to the public and let them understand what you're doing. But this is kind of what you've been doing for the past year.
We have. And again, I guess even though what you were saying before about the Congress getting the blame, there was some attention paid to the fact that the Senate was the problem in this last situation. Although, again, they slow-walked everything to put it up until the last minute to slam us against the wall and say, well, the House has to act. We sent them a bill, again, last May. We sent a bill in August to deal with... we sent a bill in May to deal with the sequester and the bill in August to deal with the tax increases and the revenue problem. And they wait until December 31st to pass a bill and then say to us, and they gave the senators 15 minutes to read their bill. 15 minutes.
You know,
and then they come to us and say, you have to do this now. And then the media makes it look like we're the problem.
I read a quote from James Madison. It said, it will be of little avail to the people if the laws are so voluminous that they cannot be read or so incoherent they cannot be understood.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. It's absolutely true.
And it seems like we can't pass one now without it being totally, you know, thousands and thousands of pages and so incoherent that even Nancy Pelosi says you have to pass it before you can find out what's in it.
Right.
We're running out of time, but again, the debt ceiling thing is coming up, and I've realized that the president is using the term investment now, but does that equate to raising taxes again?
Yes, that's always what the Democrats mean.
And more spending?
Investment means raising taxes and spending. Anytime they use the word investment, you can count on that meaning spending. And anytime they use the word revenue, that means raising taxes.
Well, now he says he's not going to even discuss or debate the debt ceiling, that you're just going to have to raise it.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I hear that, I think to myself, it's okay if the president doesn't want to talk about raising the debt ceiling, because we should do that in Congress. He should either sign the bill or not sign the bill, one or the other. That's his role. And that's okay with me if he doesn't want to debate it. John Boehner has promised he will no longer negotiate with the president. We're going to do this through what we call regular order, meaning a bill will come through committee, we will vote on it, and we hope we will pass something with 218 votes on our side of the aisle, send it over to the Senate, and then they can deal with it. What we have to do is do our job and hope that the American people can be informed as to what's going on and put the pressure on the Senate. Truly, that is where the problem is.
I'm going to totally change gears and throw this one out there. How about Al Gore and Al Jazeera? Al Gore has sold his current TV station to Al Jazeera. So we'll have an Al Jazeera America station now. What's your comment on that?
You know, I don't even know what to say. I was tied up last night for a lot of the evening. I heard a little blip about this yesterday. I heard that he did it so that he could avoid paying $9 million in taxes or something. And I thought, you know, not really much need for anybody to say anything except that.
I don't know. I think that's borderline treason there.
There's a lot of hypocrisy on the other side.
Yeah, big time. But yeah.
And you know what? Your listeners understand what hypocrisy is.
Yeah. Yes, we do. We speak plain English here in Wilkes County. Ain't that amazing?
That's right.
Not political speak. Well, we did not have time to talk about DJs in space or you and I teaming up to be in the next presidential race. But for great tasting burgers on the grill, when you're mixing up your hamburger meat, if you'll drop in some dry stuffing, like stovetop stuffing.
Oh, wow.
And with an egg and a little Worcestershire sauce.
Yep.
It makes them really good.
That'll do it. That'll do it. It's good for a meatloaf, too.
It really is. All right. Congresswoman,
take care.
Thank you so much.
We'll give all our cooking hints the next time.
There we go. That'll work.
Angela, have a wonderful Happy New Year, and we'll talk about the debt ceiling next time. How's that?
That sounds fine.
All right.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.